Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 156, University of South Carolina football preview, recorded Friday, August 14th, 2015. On tonight's show, Shane Bailey and Nick Jones of Bama Hammer take a look at the University of South Carolina's program. After three consecutive 11-win seasons, a disappointing 7-5 has the University of South Carolina in a bit of a rebuilding mode. What does Steve Spurrier, the old ball coach, have in his bag of tricks this year to bring them back to contention in the SEC East? The roundtable also takes a look at the quarterback issues that South Carolina faces. After a number of years of quality starting quarterbacks, some indecision stands behind center. Also, they take a look at the running game, the wide receivers, the defense, and all aspects of the South Carolina program. All this and more on tonight's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 156. 4 years into this crazy thing called podcasting about the SEC, and we are rolling right into the football season before we know it. But before we actually get to talk about real-life games, we first have to take a look and be prognosticators and try to figure out where we believe all of these 14 teams are going to end up. And that's a hard task as you start delving into these things. So joining me tonight, you don't have your lower third up there, Nick. Nick Jones from Bama Hammer. He'll get that done on the video real shortly. He had to close out some things before we started. Got to love technical difficulties. You know, when you're a small shop running off of the constraints that Google provides for us, while it's great that it's free, you know, sometimes things just don't work with your internet service providers and Google and your laptops and desktops. So, you know, we make do and make lemons out of lemonade. And I did say that correctly.
All we need is a whole production staff. You know, we need a tape guy, a lower thirds guy, so I don't have to worry about this, and we'll be good to go. But
yeah,
until budget constraints, you know, take their toll, you know, we should be back in order.
Budget constraints. There is no budget. That's where it starts and stops with this thing. There's not much of a budget to have. But we talk on a weekly basis, and as we get into the football season and do our previews, we're a little more regular than that. While we've been off for a few months throughout the late spring and summer, you know, we go hot and heavy here on out. You should expect to see some content from us on a weekly basis through January, February at the bare minimum as we get excited and ramped up. But tonight we're going to take a look at another team in the East. So this is our fourth team in 3 days, and we're going to go to South Carolina. To me, that's, you know, we talked Florida. So if you're interested to see what our thoughts were with the University of Florida, that's who we talked about last night. But this is another team that's very intriguing in the East. The other teams, I think, well, there's Missouri, only because they're intriguing because they keep doing it over and over and over again. And no one seems to think that they're for real. So that's a whole other conversation we'll have when we look at Missouri. But South Carolina is definitely one of those teams where there's lots of intrigue coming out of Columbia this spring and as we go into the fall on what to expect. I mean, Steve Spurrier's now, what, in his 70s? You're looking at a coach who's had tremendous success over the last 4 or 5 years, turned around and has a 7-win season, let a number of games slip away from him last year. I believe Missouri and Kentucky are two of them that come to mind. I think there's a third one. Was it Tennessee maybe?
Yeah, Tennessee went to, I think, double overtime, at least to overtime. So,
and so you start looking at a couple of games that got away from Spurrier, and he could have been in those double digits in wins. But in reality, he had to go to, was it the Independence Bowl? I'm going off memory here. I don't have any notes in front of me.
Yeah, it was the Independence Bowl.
You know, he had to go to the Independence Bowl just to keep a winning record and win that bowl game, and he did that. So, you know, South Carolina, it was not where everyone wanted them to be. I think myself included, if I went back and listened to that preview last year, I think I had them second behind Georgia. And, you know, that's not how things necessarily worked out for either program. But it's a new year, you know. Steve's back. He's fiery. He's gone from, you know, coaching for just two or three more years to four or five more years till, you know, he might never leave the coaching ranks. And that's all happened in the last couple of months. Listening to conversations. So there was a little backpedaling, and I think he was trying to be honest, if you want my opinion about it, Nick, in that situation. And then all of a sudden, after it came out and became public, all of a sudden the other coaches in the SEC were able to feed off of that from a recruiting standpoint. And he had to do a little backpedaling there and change that tune a little bit. But you know, realistically, he might only have two or three more years left in the tank. And when you're in your 70s and you're coaching like he is, as long as you're winning and having fun, it's good. But when you're struggling and having to face the criticism that they faced last year, it's a whole other ballgame at that point.
Yeah, and, you know, the local radio station here, they've been talking a lot about South Carolina. I think it was mostly because, you know, everything that you're alluding to, you alluded to it last night as well. You know, the things – a lot of times at SEC Media Days, you know, people are just looking for something to talk about. And, you know, Spurrier really went off at SEC Media Days, and that's the fire that you're referring to. You know, he was talking about people really killing him because they were 7-5, and he was talking about, you know, why aren't we talking about, you know, Tennessee and Florida are getting so much praise this year about being rebuilding programs and the upside that they have, but yet, you know, we had just as good or as better record than they did last year. And that's an interesting point, but, you know, you look back at what Spurrier has been able to do, and on Jocks, you know, here in Birmingham, they made a point, and they said, you know, South Carolina, this may be Spurrier's best coaching job. And that's tough to say, you know, when you look back at the talent that he had at Florida, even going back to his early days. It's tough to say that, but when you realize the pedigree that South Carolina had when he got there, which was really nothing, and, you know, he had, what, three straight years with 11-win seasons, and I was reading a stat earlier today, you know, like you said, Shane, you know, you were not alone. I might have even picked him to be in the top two in the East last year, but this is the first year since 2010 that South Carolina is not picked by the media to be in the top two in the SEC East. Now, those predictions don't dictate performance, but it's just like we talked about with Alabama and some of these other teams last night. You know, the media trusts that they're going to be there. In the past couple of years, we've trusted that South Carolina is either going to be in the SEC championship game like they were a couple of years ago when they faced Cam Newton before Auburn went on to eventually win the national championship, or at least be up there at the top competing with other teams like Georgia and Florida in the past and, you know, Tennessee even a couple years ago. So 7-5 is definitely not a bad mark. You know, I think especially in a pre-Spurrier time at South Carolina, that's a pretty good mark. But when you've had three 11-win seasons and a guy that has, you know, the resume that Spurrier has and talks so much like Spurrier, and, you know, there's such high expectations now at South Carolina, you're going to get talk like this. There's no doubt. And like you said, a 70-year-old coach, 70-plus-year-old coach, there's going to be questions every single year that he's going to have to answer about when he's going to hang it up and if, you know, his age is hindering him and anything else. So a lot of question marks going into the season for South Carolina, a lot of them on the field, but a lot of distractions, if you want to look at it that way, off the field with your coaching staff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a broke record, and that coaching and age thing. I mean, you had it with Bobby Bowden down at Florida State. You had it with Joe Pa up in Penn State. You have it over in Virginia Tech with Frank Beamer. And you're going to have it with Steve Spurrier. But realistically, if you're winning, they don't talk about it. You know, And that's the difference. All of a sudden, you go from 11 wins to 7 wins. Now, all of a sudden, there's a conversation about age. If he would have had another 10, 11 win season last year, do you think any of this conversation would have been happening? I don't think so.
No. And so,
while winning cures a lot of things, it also helps. And it's just the general job security of coaching. And so, you know, who knows where these rumors could have started and what's behind it. You know, I mean, for all we know, there could be a PR machine behind South Carolina to put this out there to help fuel that. Because if something were to go awry, well, it makes it easier for, I don't want to play conspiracy theorist here, because it's the media has a ton to jump on this. There's no reason for South Carolina to have this PR push. But you could easily see where, you know, they could look at this and say, you know, this is a great opportunity for us to set ourselves up and manage this process so that we can find a successor. And I think that if he turns this thing around and can become second in the East, have a good bowl game, I don't see there. I think this whole conversation goes away to a large degree. And what you finally have come back is talking more about what's happening on the field. Spurrier can leave when he wants to, but it's all going to take winning on the field for those things to happen.
Yeah, and you're right. You know, winning does right, if not all wrongs, most wrongs. And, you know, when you really brought me back when we think about some of these guys like Frank Beamer, who's, of course, still at Virginia Tech, but also Bobby Bowden, Joe Pa. You know, with Bobby Bowden and Joe Pa, it was very apparent that they were not going to get fired. You know, you can say what you want, you know, the whole, you can't fire me, I quit, I resign. But there's so much mutual respect. And, you know, somebody posed the question and I really made me think, is who would South Carolina go and get? You know, we're not firing Steve Spurrier right now. I mean, obviously he's on for this season, but you think about, you know, if his worst season's gonna be 7-5 or, you know, whatever we have them pegged at this year, that's not a bad mark still. But the problem is he's pretty much you know, he can't be fired. So he will walk away when he wants to. But the problem is like Bobby Bowden and like Joe Pa, a lot of times, you know, not to say that you can't coach within age, but it gets to the point where there probably needs to be a mover is just so polarizing that people don't want to uproot that and cause more issues. But I don't think we're at that point right now, but if you're looking down the road, I think that's what the media is trying to stir up. But, you know, 7-5 last year, nothing to – obviously you want a better season. I think a lot of people expected a better season, but it's still a winning record. You still made it to a bowl game. You still finished on top, you know, when you talk about winning the Independence Bowl. So it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of folks have South Carolina as third in the East, and it wouldn't take that much to have to make that one little climb to second, and all of this conversation changes at that point. But what's interesting about what you said is that, you know, I don't see Spurrier getting fired either. You look at some of the comments he's made, and they ring so true. I think when he said he got there, there was only $1 million donor to South Carolina football, and now there's, what, a dozen or so? It's because Steve Spurrier's there, and it's because what Steve Spurrier did. He has brought South Carolina football back to the relevancy. There's no way they're going to turn around and say, you're fired. They're going to have the conversation where Steve, it's time for us to work a strategy for you to retire, and so that it looks good for both of us. And that's the way it's going to go out. He's going to go out on a horse. He's not going to be shown the back door in this scenario. It's he's done too much to South Carolina, and he is now synonymous with South Carolina football. I think that's the last thing that they would want to do, is to have that tarnished, because all of a sudden he's created a legacy for South Carolina football that was never there before. All that being
right. I mean,
go on.
I was just going to say, you know, just like you said, South Carolina football is Steve Spurrier. You know, they've had some, you know, Lou Holtz was there. They probably had a couple bowl game appearances then. But we would not be talking about South Carolina in the way we are today if there wasn't a guy like Steve Spurrier who everybody wants to talk about. When he takes the mic, people listen. You know, and I'm not sure that, you know, South Carolina could pull another coach like that, even post Steve Spurrier. So you're right. And the donor thing, you know, that tells the story right there, because just like we talked about last night with Florida, you know, money plays a major role in these things. And if he can bring the donors, even if he's not performing up to, you know, his original 11-3 or whatever it is, 11-2, you know, they're still going to rely on him to bring in donors. So.
Yeah, and he can bring in donors after the fact if he's retired. Mm-hmm. He won't be able to do that if he's let go. One other thing, and I had a train of thought there and I lost it, so we're not even gonna merit that whole conversation. Oh, I know what it was, the facilities. And we mentioned this last night, how Florida was vying for some new facilities. And South Carolina's done the same thing. I mean, he's done all of this to roll into a $15 million indoor stadium, indoor practice facility that's just opened. He just beat Georgia and I think Florida for that, for completion. So, you know, those are high marks that Spurrier's bringing to the table. And I said all that. We've talked for about 15 minutes about South Carolina football, and we've not talked about one single thing on the field. That's the Steve Spurrier effect right there. You know, that's the misdirection that he can provide. And he does that so eloquently on the podium as well. So let's take a look at what we have to look at with those folks. You know, their biggest question is going to be quarterback. What's going to be there? Who's going to emerge? I think Connor Mitch is your guy. He was the guy after the spring leading into, you know, fall camp. He's the guy. I have a feeling he might not be the guy when the season's over, but he's Spurrier's guy to get things started. You know, Lorenzo Nunez is the guy right now. I don't know if you saw that quote from just the I think it was from today, actually. Spurrier said there may be a chance that there's a quarterback that could rise a spot in the depth chart after the scrimmage, after this past Saturday's scrimmage. Well, that would mean that Lorenzo Nunez is moving up, and Michael Scarinici, is that how you're saying it? Is that how they say it down
there?
Sounds
good to me.
Yeah, that's how bad it is in South Carolina. We don't even know how to pronounce the quarterbacks' names. But, you know, he's starting to get some attention there. But Spurrier's not afraid to run two quarterbacks. He's done it time and time and time again. And what he's done is he's found out which one has been best. I mean, was it Dylan Thompson and Connor Shaw were dual quarterbacks for a couple years at the start of the season? Dylan Thompson stayed on the sideline most of the time while Connor Shaw led that team. Then it was Dylan Thompson's team last year. But you look at what that does. He's not afraid to say, you know, I'm going to run more than one quarterback. And then he's going to take the hot hand and the one that's going to provide the best on-the-field capabilities and leadership to try to lead the team. And so while Connor Mitch is the old pro that's got the most – experience, he's going to have his work cut out as this season progresses, and there's other quarterbacks hot on his heels, and he's not afraid to play both of them or all of them in that matter.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. You know, you look back at Steve Spurrier's time, I mean, he's done some amazing things with the quarterbacks that he's had. I mean, we always refer to the Steven Garcia, you know, at least in Alabama fans' mind, you know, he's the guy that carved up Alabama when, what was it, back 2011 or I think it was. You know, when they beat Alabama, you know, famously on that 3:30 or 2:30 CBS game, and you look at Connor Shaw and Dylan Thompson, a great 1-2 punch, and you see Dylan Thompson, a much more physical guy, but Connor Shaw, a guy that I think is even still overperforming, because, you know, if Johnny Manziel steps down with the Browns, he's going to get a chance to get a starting NFL job, which, you know, a lot of SEC fans would have probably never thought would happen, but it did. And, you know, I think last year it was a little bit too much to put on the shoulders of Dylan Thompson after, you know, this being, although he's been around the program for a long time and actually had quite a bit of snaps, if you look at it, he was probably a pretty experienced quarterback coming into last year. But I think that was a weak spot. You know, I was kind of putting a lot of trust in him last year, and I was really big on Mike Davis, as we'll probably talk about later in the run game. And those were two hinge points that really seemed kind of weak at times, especially in that opening, you know, week game against Texas A&M, which I still can't believe happened, you know, after Texas A&M's season unraveled right after that. But, you know, here's the deal.
And so did Spurrier Kenny Thrill. And so did Kenny Thrills, for that matter.
Yeah, especially Kenny Thrill more than anybody else. But you look at what Spurrier has been able to do, and don't be surprised just because, you know, Connor Mitch and Nunez and some of these other guys aren't top, you know, blue chip, five-star guys, West Coast kind of guys. You know, don't count a Steve Spurrier quarterback out, especially at South Carolina, because, you know, it's no secret that Stephen Garcia and Connor Shaw and even Dylan Thompson, guys that have set records at South Carolina, weren't the best passers, but in that system they thrive. So I think you're right. And, you know, if Nunez, I think he's more of a runner. So I think you may see that, maybe an option mix with him. So definitely, if there's any team that's going to play two quarterbacks, you've got to bet on South Carolina being able not only to do it, but also make it work.
No, I totally agree with that analysis. And, you know, Spurrier's has evolved, and that's what's keeping him so relevant is that as a coach, I think he's evolved more in the style of quarterbacking than anything. I mean, he's allowed those players to have some of that flexibility in the pocket that if you would have asked us 5 years ago, could Steve Spurrier have one of those quarterbacks, we would have said there's no way. He wouldn't have recruited that type of player and played that player. They would have had to play his type of ball. But he's adjusted the way he does his offense to fit those things. And so he's able to see success in it, and I continue to see him grow in that manner. So you mentioned the running back and where that's going to lead South Carolina. I'll let you talk just a second about that and Mike Davis.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when you look at Mike Davis' stats, I don't have him in front of me, but I think he went for around 900 yards last year. But I really thought he had the potential to be a 1,000 to 1,200 yard back. I mean, he's still a good talent. I mean, you saw him go in the third round or the fourth round of the NFL draft, which is, you know, prime position to draft a, you know, kind of the under the radar halfback. He had all the skills, but I don't, you know, he did struggle with some injury problems last year and didn't see the field nearly as much. But, you know, one of the things that strikes me is they kind of got away from that. And, you know, we did talk about that, and even, you know, a lot of people have written about it, but there's three games that, you know, we talked about it last night with Florida that could easily change your schedule and, you know, make it from a great year to a horrible year or even a mediocre year, like we're talking about with South Carolina. But and it was mainly quarterback play that probably limited them that last year, but if they could have won that Tennessee game, you know, taken that Kentucky game, you know, and done some things with that, changes their season completely. So if they can find just maybe not even a top performer, but some stability at quarterback and some stability at running back, they could improve this year.
Yeah, I mean, to do that, I think it's gonna fall on Brandon Wilds, a senior, as far as their run game. I mean, he had some touches last year. I mean, when you look at their best rushers, I was just looking at that. You know, their third best rusher was the wide receiver, Farrow. You know, so that's an area of somewhat concern. But it's not a manner of depth. I think I was looking at 9 or 10 running backs listed on the depth chart. So they've got the horses in the stall. Can one of those come back out and be that thoroughbred that's going to fit the style that Spurrier wants to run and be effective? That's the million-dollar question that everybody has about their running backs. But, you know, when you have such a large complement setting in there, I think there's 3 or 4 seniors, then 1 or 2 more juniors, and then the rest are sophomore and freshmen. So you've got lots of talent and ability right there. And who knows what's there that's with another year of development might be that shining star that South Carolina needs there. They've always, I mean, before Davis, I mean, you had, was it, busted his knee?
Lattimore,
thank you. I mean, it's not like they haven't had a stable of quality running backs sitting there for the last number of years at South Carolina through this run they've had. It's when you have that kind of success, it's easy to recruit those type of players again. So somebody is sitting there that's going to give them the depth at running back. I feel confident in that. Now, who that person is right now, you know, that's for us to figure out. And I think Spurrier will figure out as well. Because just like we've talked about in the quarterback situation, just because you're number one on the depth chart leading off the season, that doesn't make you the number one player on that position or in that position on the field for South Carolina come midseason.
Yeah, and, you know, not to advance to somewhere that we're not ready to go yet, but
– no, take us where you want.
You mentioned for Farrell Cooper, you know, that's a guy – I talked about DeMarcus Robinson last night, a guy that really was underutilized, in my opinion, at Florida. And Farrell Cooper had some great plays last year, I think 9 touchdowns. I can't remember how many receiving yards, but you just look at him, and he to me is the most overall exciting player in the SEC. He's a great punt returner, great kick returner, a guy that can do it all. You know, he's a much more athletic receiver than he is. You know, somebody that's gonna, you know, overpower you or be you know, snag balls out of the air like a Julio Jones would do, but. To me, like you said, you know, they're hitting him with a lot of end arounds, and I think he has to be just – he's an extremely valuable piece, but he needs to be somebody that is a you know, just the go-to guy in that offense. And you look at, you know, last year I think their second receiver had, you know, 5 touchdowns. So Spurrier isn't one to just key on somebody like you see Lane Kiffin doing with Amari Cooper, but at the same time, you've got that talent on the outside. You've got to utilize it.
Yeah, no. And, you know, you go back to the Kentucky days of Randall Cobb where he was everything for that offense. You kind of see Farrell Cooper being able to step in and kind of be, to some degree, that role. I mean, Cobb was a kickoff and punt returner. He ran the quarterback wildcat, as they called it. He was the wide receiver. They put him in run plays. There wasn't anything that he didn't do. I think at one point – during the season, I think 65%, almost 2/3 of the touches that the offensive had went through him in some way, shape, or form, whether he was the receiver, the quarterback, whatever shape or form. Farrell Cooper can be that guy for South Carolina this year, that superstar type of individual. He's got the talent. Spurrier, I don't think, is going to be afraid to use him in that kind of capacity. I mean, you saw it last year. He did a little bit of everything. As thin as they can be for that star talent, why not try it and see? It was, as a Kentucky fan, we loved watching Randall Cobb. Every time he touched the ball, it didn't matter what he had. It was always exciting to see him on the field. That could be that same excitement at South Carolina.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about Spurrier, you know, vastly more offensive-minded coach than a defensive-minded coach. And, you know, to me, when I was doing some prep for this, you know, you realized how much South Carolina's defense has really fallen. You know, I mean, of course, they lost Jadeveon Clowney a couple years ago, but to go from a pretty dominating defense, probably one of the most dominating defenses in the SEC East a couple years ago, and now to, you know, being 91st in the nation, giving up points – you know, you're not going to win football games. And that's as much as we want to hark on, you know, interceptions and lack of consistency on offense. You know, like we talked about with Florida last night, if you can put a good defense together, you're going to win football games. And, you know, they did add this guy, Isaiah Johnson from Kansas. I think this is a huge pickup because he's going to anchor that team. He's a safety. He's got 2 years of starting experience, a fifth-year senior. I think he had like 74 tackles last year alone for Kansas. And, you know, that's something that several teams have keyed in on. You know, we talk about so much about Jacob Coker and some of these transfer quarterbacks, but a lot of guys are going out there and getting, you know, either guys that have had discipline issues and been kicked off teams, or even just guys that are fifth years wanting to transfer. So, you know, look for him to be a guy to watch. And they brought in John Hoke, who you know, I think Spurrier worked with in his NFL days. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. They've had co-offensive coordinators for several years now, but they are actually one of the only teams I've ever heard of that have co-offensive and defensive coordinators, which is kind of wild. You know, Lorenzo Ward stepping back to be a co-defensive coordinator after last season. So, you know, they're going to have to improve on the defensive side of the ball. And from all indications, they will, especially in the secondary. But, you know, even I wouldn't say that a lot of people have, you know, keyed in on the fact that South Carolina hasn't recruited as well. And, you know, it was still a big steal to get a guy like Jadeveon Clowney. There's no doubt about that. But you've got to have consistent, you know, 3- and 4-star guys across the field that can perform, you know, to field a good defense, you know, especially in the SEC.
Yeah, and, I mean, they won their state. You know, that's what you have to do. And that type of player is not always going to be in your state every year. That's what I think it's failed to be mentioned. Yeah, they were able to get Jadeveon Clowney, but it was his hometown state. It wasn't like they got him from Alabama or Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, or even Florida. They got him from South Carolina. You know, there's very few of those type of players that are in the state that South Carolina is going to lose out on. So that's a little different scenario. Those guys just don't come around on out of your state every year. That's the special kind of player, and he's going to show up in a different state every year. So, you know, I'm not going to hold that against South Carolina as far as what they're able to recruit and how they recruit. I do think that the comments he made were used against him and hurt him a little bit on a couple of players. I think overall it didn't hurt them enough to matter, because if you want to go play for Steve Spurrier, you want to play for him whether it's 1 year, 2 years, or all 4 years you get to play. Or if you're NFL talent, the 3 years you're going to get to play for him, you'll take what you can get to play for somebody like that if it's a good fit for you as an individual. So I don't think it overall hurt them that much, and I don't put that much weight into the not being able to get a class like they did with Clowney.
Yeah, you know, not to all of that said, one of the problems is, you know, you look at, we kind of talked about this with Florida last night, and this is something interesting to see, but one of the things that hurts South Carolina just as much as it hurts Florida with having a permanent, you know, rivalry game at the end of the season, you know, Florida, of course, with Florida State, you know, South Carolina with Clemson. You know, Clemson's been a lot of people, you know, like to, you know, hark on them for, you know, choking at the end of the year and, you know, being overhyped, but they're going to be another team that's going to be competing for the ACC title, probably 10 plus wins this year. And then, you know, this year as well, they're adding first game of the year, something I'm very excited about. I think it's might even be a Thursday night game against North Carolina at Charlotte, you know, in the Panther Stadium. So this is two ACC schools. I mean, you know, UNC isn't a, you know, top 50 or, you know, a top 25 program, but Larry Fedora is a guy that has turned that program around. They've had some NFL talent, you know, just to have, you know, I mean, you look at, we talk about Texas A&M and even Alabama sometimes, you know, saying, you know, they're not playing very hard out of conference schedules. These are two mid to upper tier ACC schools that South Carolina is going to have to play this year.
Add a UCF who's a good program too. That's a tough out of conference schedule. Now they get a pass with Citadel, but if you're playing those three teams, you deserve a pass. You know, that's scheduling a tough out of conference schedule right there. Whether you're talking a mid major program with UCF or not, they're always putting good talent out on the field. So, I mean, as you look at this schedule, you know, it's not going to be an easy task for South Carolina. They get, which you mentioned, they get to start the season off. It is a Thursday game, I'm reading that right with the calendar, versus North Carolina. They get Kentucky at home, but then they've got to go to Georgia. You know, the hardest game on their schedule on the East is Georgia, and they have to go to the Hedges to play them. Then they have UCF they go to Missouri, you know, the other team in the East that's the powerhouse right now. Yep. They've got to go to their home court too. Then they go back home to Columbia to host LSU, which is a win for them. If they got to play a tough SEC West opponent, let it be at home if it can be. Then they have Vanderbilt at home, but then they go to College Station. That's not an easy place to play. We talked about Texas A&M. While they're going to be improved, they're not going to be the top two or three teams in the West. So, you know, if you had to play the best West team at home, you want to play the best West team at home. And that's the way it works out for South Carolina on the schedule. But it's still not an easy task. They go to Tennessee, they get Florida, and they get Clemson at home. So,
you know. Yeah, definitely not an easy schedule. You know, you talk about the ACC schools. But, you know, the good thing is, like you said, I mean, there is no bad SEC West team this year. And that's just how it is. I mean, you would kind of hope that maybe you would get an Arkansas. But even this year, you know, you look at Arkansas, you look at Texas A&M, you know, even though Texas A&M didn't have the best of years last year, you never know what you're going to get out of that offense. You know, Alabama was able to shut them out and score 59 points. But on the other hand, you know, they could score 59 points on you fairly easily. But, you know, two of the games that I would say definitely, like you said, having to go to Georgia and to Missouri, those are two teams that, you know, I fully expect if South Carolina is going to compete for the East, they're going to have to go through those two schools. And the problem is, you know, Sanford Stadium is not an easy place to play. And Faurot Field is, you know, becoming a tougher place to play, you know, with Missouri being so good as they have been the past couple of years. But when I look at it, you know, I was looking, you know, I always like to look into the bye weeks like we did last night. And I think they're going to get a win, to me, against Texas A&M. Not only it's at home, but also, if you look at it, Texas A&M is coming off a tough road game against Ole Miss the week before, which is not easy at all. But the problem is, you know, you've got to go to Tennessee, pretty much your top three East teams for South Carolina, all on the road, which, you know, Alabama has that where they have to go to LSU, but they get Auburn at home, you know, in alternating years. So I don't know if this is something that happened when we went to 14 teams, but every other year having those three teams on the road, it's not, I mean, that's difficult.
Well, when you would look at this schedule, you would originally think that Florida would be the number two team. Yep. or three team in the East. So it would have switched, you know, this just doesn't happen to be that way right now. You know, you said you like to back into a number, and I was saying, you know, they're an 8-win team this year, and I can't give them 4 losses. I'll give them 5 losses no matter how I look at this.
Yeah.
Because there's 2 or 3 games it's like they're going to win this one. If they win this one, they're going to lose this one, that one. And when you do it and look at it, every scenario I come up with, I'm at five losses. They're at 7-5, which is what everyone else has predicted them to be at. And I thought that, I mean, they're going to have a lot of improvement, which is possible. But again, like we mentioned last night, every team's improving. So it's going to have to be exponentially higher than the other teams in the SEC, both the East and West, for that to happen. And I don't know if that can occur. I really was starting this podcast off before I delved into their schedule too deep, saying they're going to be an 8-win team, but I'm backtracking. They're a 7-win team again.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at it last year, they were a 6-6 team going into, you know, the bowl game, which a 7-5 season is an improvement. I really feel like there's going to be an improvement, but like you said, I've got them at 7-5. I really, even last night, I kind of figured, you know, with what you were saying last night, that you were a little bullish thinking, you know, 8 or 9 wins for them. But when I sit down and did it, 8 wins is tough because I don't think that they're going to get 2 wins against out of conference against Clemson and UNC. You know, I gave them one of those. I gave them the UNC win. They could just as easily lose to UNC and, you know, beat Clemson or, you know, vice versa. But the thing is like you said, you know, I gave them the UK win. But at the same time, last night I said, you know, that's going to be one of Florida's hallmark wins is against the South Carolina team. But, I mean, 7-5 in the regular season is an improvement. It'll get them to a little bit better bowl than the Independence Bowl. But, you know, when you talk about improvement, a lot of people just don't expect one more win and, you know, still only, what, one or two games over 500.
Yeah, they're expecting at least an 8-win season. I'm hard-pressed to make that happen there. Any other comments that you have on South Carolina before we close the book on this team and head forward to the rest of the SEC?
You know, not too much. I mean, still look at the fact that one of the most interesting things, like you said, we spent 15 or 20 minutes talking about Spurrier, but I think that's going to be the storyline for the year. It's already the storyline in the preseason is, you know, how good of a coach is Steve Spurrier still? Does he still have that magic that gave them three, you know, 11-win seasons? And the fact is like we said last night, I mean, a lot of people have penciled in Georgia and Missouri at the top of the East, but there's a lot of improvement. You know, there's a lot of room for movement in that SEC East. You know, it's going to be tough to knock off Georgia, but you know, I picked Florida. I think you did too. Florida at 7-5, so you know, the head-to-head is probably going to win out in the rankings against these two teams. So. I don't think there's any way, in my opinion, for them to get to Atlanta, but there's not going to be very much separation at all between that 3-5, like we said last night. So if you want to salvage a good year, you're going to have to pick up these wins against these teams like Florida, you know, like Missouri, like Kentucky, who I think could be up there. And it's going to be tough week in and week out having to play games like that.
Yeah, no, you're completely right. I'm excited about football, but you know, it's if you are a true fan of a particular program, I know when we look at the Kentucky podcast, I try to be realistic. It's like, but they can win that game if they play the way they're supposed to play, and everything falls in place, they can win that game. Well, yeah, I'm going to say that because I'm a fan of that team, but how many times does that happen week in and week out on the field? It just doesn't. So when you look at it from that perspective and you step back and you look at South Carolina in that light, you know, that's where you end up with 7 wins. You're right. Realistically, are they going to win all 4 out of conference games? There's a good chance that they're going to lose one of those.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at, you know, the middle tier, the SEC East, middle and low end, you're going to have Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, Florida. One of those could sneak up and beat you. And so while it's fun on our end, you know, I wouldn't want to be another South Carolina fan this year with expectations of an 8 or 9 win season, because I you're going to sit here at the end of the season and probably be disappointed. And you know, as long as it's not Kentucky that's the one that they lose to or win against, I'm okay with it happening. But I just don't see that to be the case. So, wow, that was a little enlightening on my half. Thanks for walking through that with me there, Nick. I did not expect. I was already at the beginning of the podcast. Oh yeah, they're an 8-win team this year, but they might not be. So, yeah. And that's the way we do things here on the podcast. We hope you've enjoyed listening to us. We'd love your comments. Follow us at SECSRT on Twitter. These get posted to iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher Radio, anywhere you can get an RSS feed, listen to podcasts. Check us out. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you liked, what you agreed with, what you disagreed with. We're not always right, but like the guys last year from A&M that were on us, you know, after week one, I didn't hear too much more out of them after about week 4 or 5 when all the things we were saying tended to be correct. So, guys, we thank you all for listening, and we are going to call this podcast done.